Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Binge Down, how are we feeling today? It's your boy Dave, and I am joined by fellow co-hosts Brian and Kyle, and we are back with our coverage of Netflix's live-action adaptation of Avatar: The Last Airbender, specifically episodes 3 and 4, titled Omashu and Into the Dark. And don't worry, today's intro is going to be much more quick than that of the first recordings. All I really want to say is that I think the combination of 3 and 4, to me, were better than the combination of 1 and 2, I'd say. The creative choices to combine certain plot lines, even from future seasons of the animated show, I honestly thought were pretty good. I felt like, even though I've watched the animated show and it does feel weird seeing these creative changes, I felt like they kind of really worked, especially in episode 3. They felt very connected when watching, and overall, I just thought the episodes were very solid. As always, I do have some complaints, but we'll just get to those when we do. Just like the first recording, we're going to be covering big chunks of story together rather than just doing scene by scene. So with all that being said and all that being out of the way, I'll just hand it over to either Kyle or B-Toms for their first thoughts on these episodes.
Yeah, I can take that from you. I was actually able to watch both of these episodes twice, and I think my visceral gut reaction on the first watch through was, oh man, this isn't great. But upon a rewatch, it actually was a lot more palatable, and I found myself enjoying it quite a bit. I completely agree. Credit where credit is due. They put a lot of storylines and condensed them into these two episodes. It was probably about 6-7 episodes from the animated series that we saw portrayed here, and it did feel fluid. Everything kind of did feel connected, and while, you know, the pacing was really, really fast, it still felt okay, and they fit in a lot of iconic characters that I otherwise would have been disappointed to not see, and we'll get into them specifically later.
We know.
Yeah. But no, I agree it's good. I still have my gripes. Certain things that didn't quite make sense, and some of the writing still made me roll my eyes. But overall, I would agree. I think these two as a parcel was probably better than episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah, I think that the way they broke things up, or rather, I guess combined things in episode 3 worked really well. Maybe I'd have to watch again. If I'm honest, I just don't think I enjoyed these episodes that much. There's definitely some highlights and good spots. I really like Zuko and Iroh, like just continuing off what we talked about in episodes 1 and 2. I think I understand why they have to make changes when they're going for this quote unquote realistic version of the Avatar world. I just think it's just not for me, is how I feel about it.
And I will not argue against that, because
yeah,
I get those feelings too when watching it sometimes. And I will even say, since our last recording, I have actually been binge watching the animated show,
yeah,
of course. So. But I get it. I mean, realistically, their whole journey to the North Pole, or, you know, the Northern Water Tribe, is 15 episodes, which, if Aang is really trying to learn waterbending, you know, you're not going to spend 15 episodes trying to get him there. You know, you're going to get him to where he needs to be. So I think it worked in episode 3. We'll get into those complaints as we get through the discussion here, but let's go ahead and we'll just kick off things with episode 3, just talking about Team Avatar as a whole. So the arrival at Omashu, we get our first looks into Jet, Teo, and Sai, and we can just start with that conversation there. Just the introduction of those three characters that we are very familiar with from the animated show. what were your guys' thoughts on the portrayals and depictions of those characters?
I was pleasantly surprised to see Sai, the Mechanist, and his son, and Jet. I think it worked well. It makes a lot of sense. We're in this Earth Kingdom stronghold. We honestly, in the cartoon show, we ping pong a ton around like different, like
it's
we go
Omashu,
to
Ba Sing Se, and then I think back to Omashu.
Yeah. Which is, and like, we also, I mean, we go to into Fire Nation territory, mm-hmm. and you know, so we're kind of all over the place. So it makes sense to consolidate these things. But Jet's introduction was perfectly fine. It, you know, the him and Sokka dynamic was good right from the start. I like them kind of riffing to get into Ba Sing Se. It was no Mr. Postadocalopodopoulos or whatever the last name.
Pippin Popsadopoulos.
But they did nail it when the guards at the gate like completely earthbend that dude's cart off the fucking, like that was a nice little one-to-one nod of like, you know, that exactly happened type of stuff. So I honestly enjoyed this stuff.
Yeah, I thought Jet in particular was cast very well, and I think he his line deliveries, at no point was I getting that cringe from him, because Jet is supposed to be a little bit of a cringe character when he's flirting with Katara, but I think the portrayal really came through for me. And I would say same with Sai and Teo, maybe to a lesser degree, but both of them were bringing some good game there, and it was nice to see Abed from Community playing Sai.
Yes.
You know, he's a good actor to have there. But again, just to reiterate what you guys are saying, it made sense that for the live action, we wouldn't be ping ponging between Earth Kingdom villages. And they just shoved all of those storylines into Omashu. It made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly thought the creative decision of doing this was actually really well. It made the ending of episode 3 a little bit more suspenseful and like kind of feel new to a degree. And so I really appreciate that. I'm just going to complete the tic-tac-toe here. Jet was incredible, man. I thought he was so good. Specifically, obviously, the fight that he gets into with those Fire Nation randos, the way that he was using the tiger twin hooks. Oh, it was so badass, I thought.
Classic. And
yeah, I love those weapons. Those might be my weapon of choice. That or a katana, they're close, but he was the one. Even back in the day when I remember watching this, he was the first time I'd ever seen these kinds of weapons. And I just always, it just resonates with me so well. And he's scissor badass. But yeah, I thought Sai and Teo to a lesser degree were still pretty solid. No complaints there. It was, like you said, it was good seeing Abed from Community as well. But honestly, with just those introductions, we can just move on to the next big piece of the Omashu, which is Zuko versus Aang. Zuko's arrival there and the Aang showdown, which another thumbs up for me. Honestly, another great fight. Maybe even the best one between these two we've gotten so far. I really like the use of the environment that not only were we getting the bending, but we were getting the uses of the environment that Aang kind of does rely on in his fights against Zuko, sometimes when he doesn't have his staff in particular with him. So no complaints from me on this fight. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, the choreography is good. Zuko himself is just good at the kicking. And I know we mentioned it last time that the kicking looks sick with the firebending, but I think it still looks good even without the special effects of the firebending. So, and it was nice that we get a fight without the firebending. I thought it was good for Iroh to be like, you know, don't use your firebending because we might get in trouble type of deal. I thought all of it narratively made sense and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, so I have nothing bad to say other than right when he said, I can take him without my bending, I was like, Netflix, saving a couple $100,000. Okay. But I completely agree. The choreography was great. I think just the Omashu markets, which weren't really emphasized in the original, but just the entire aesthetic of Omashu looked fantastic. I don't even think we talked about when they're flying in on Appa, just the entire look of it looked very, very sharp.
Absolutely. It's just one of those things where I'm watching and kind of the same way I was feeling when I was watching Sandman. The places that we would visit in Sandman, it was just like, oh, I wish this place was real, you know, kind of thing. And it was the Omashu looked incredible. I can't deny that. The other, obviously, the thing we have to call out is the cabbages, guys.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Perfect. 10 out of 10, no notes.
I was a little, the second time he didn't say it, I was like, there's no way they're not going to say it. Like, I would have been so furious if it was just like a nod in the way that they weren't going to say it. And then at the very end, he hits the My Cabbages. And it is the guy, right? It is the voice actor.
It is the original. Yes. Yep.
I mean, that was funny. I think they did that really well because they knew the OG watchers would want him, and the way to like, you know, hold him off a little bit with a couple fake outs was good.
Yeah. When he offers Katara to try and she's like, not now. No, it was perfect. Absolutely. So what did you got? I thought they did a really good job of kind of blending Sai's actual storyline where he was dealing with the firebenders and kind of having Jet's storyline overlap with that, where Sai became the main antagonist of Jet. And they used that whole thing to kind of replicate Jet's quote act of terrorism against a Fire Nation village, but it actually becomes what he considers to be the traitor in Sai. I just think all of that, I gotta give him credit because I won't be doing it too much, but I think they fit a lot in here and it really worked.
Yeah, narratively and for character motivations, it makes a ton of sense. It was, I don't want to say their only option because that feels like I'm taking away the credit from them, but they did it very well, I thought.
Yeah, of course, watching it, I was definitely quick to hate on it. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they're going to pull all this into one episode. It just feels so ridiculous. But I feel like it was quickly discarded. I feel that they were just really well done. I mean,
if you think of in the original cartoon, let's say Jet ends up joining the team and then we run into the Mechanist in episode, whatever, like 17 it might be.
Yeah, I think it was.
Like, if 17. Jet was there, he would have fucking been pissed at this guy. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that it totally makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm.
I also like that they did highlight the Mechanist identifying Sokka as an engineer, yes, too. That was kind of a smaller plot line in the original Western Air Temple, wherever it was in the show, and they kept it there, which is good. That's a big part of Sokka's characters, and one of those things that is kind of like a secondary characteristic of his. So we didn't get as much sarcasm, although we had some in these two episodes. We didn't get the misogyny, but we got the engineering medal from Sokka.
Yeah, that might have been, I think, maybe my favorite low-key part of these episodes, and I thought Sokka was so much improved in these two episodes. He might have been, I mean, Zuko, I think, is still my favorite in the moment, but I think Sokka might be up there now too.
Yeah, from the beginning, I honestly always vibe with Sokka, and I think it was always because his voice still to me sounds very similar to the original characters, and I think that helps a lot. So I'm in on Sokka as a character, absolutely. Definitely Zuko number one for me, but Sokka is up there. But to what you were saying, B-Toms, yeah, that I just watched that episode of the Northern Air Temple, and it's just so funny when they're just gassing each other up. They look at each other, it's like, you're a genius. And it's like, no, stop. Yeah. You're a genius. It's so good. Could have used a little bit more of that camaraderie here, but
it's the rotten eggs, right? To get the natural gas.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they figure out the whole balloon thing, which I would have actually probably liked to see here. The air balloon. Did they not? Am I missing that? Did they?
No, we saw his like designs in his workshop. It's designs, so it was alluded to that he was working on the balloon. And also Sokka gives him the idea of the vent latch at the top. So no, they did a good job of showing that too. And I guess it's just assumed since he was dealing with the Fire Nation, they may or may not have their hands on that design.
Yeah, I think it would be nice, and I assume it will happen, that we will run into them using his designs later on. I think it would kind of not necessarily cheapen this interaction, but it would make it feel less, maybe even real. If when he's like, oh, like I gave them nothing, like meaningless designs. But we know in the show, in the original, he kind of gives them fair, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term. So it would be cool, and I'm assuming that will happen, that we run into that.
Do you think they will bring back any of the characters like Jet, Sai, Teo? I can't remember if in the animated show we see Sai and Teo again. I think we see him one more time, but
if we get to the invasion, they were a huge part of the invasion because he invents the submarines and those caterpillar guys, and Jet comes back in Ba Sing Se, and he is a large part of the brain.
You're totally right. So they have to,
If we make it that far in the live action, it would be hard to do the story without him. And I think the community should be receiving both of those portrayals positively in the live action. Jet was really good.
Yeah. Some people saying they wish Jet was Zuko. And I was like, I don't know. I think Zuko's actor is doing a fantastic job of Zuko. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I agree.
I can't respect that. Yeah. But
what
while we're on Jet, what do we think of the Freedom Fighters? I thought they looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, oh my God. Why can't I think of his name right now? The kid with the bow and arrow. Yes.
Long shot
was legitimately perfect. It was almost like the cartoon was a cartoon version of him versus him being a live adaptation version of the cartoon.
He
looked
perfect.
So dead on. Yeah.
I missed the interaction from the animated show when Aang sees Pipsqueak and the Duke for the first time. So Pipsqueak's obviously the big guy and the Duke's the kid. Mm-hmm. And he goes up to the Duke and he's like, Pipsqueak, like that's a funny name. And it's the big guy looks down and he's like, you think my name's funny? And Aang looks at him, he's like, it's hilarious.
They did kind of give that line to Katara.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
a little bit.
But we can also just top off episode 3 discussion with the Iroh sacrifice, essentially what we thought of that. I know Kyle, you were having some minor complaints with Iroh as a character. For me personally, I'll just say it, I think he definitely shot up a lot in these two episodes. I'm just curious to hear on your thoughts on this action that he did, and maybe both, I guess, episodes' thoughts on him growing on you at all.
I think the way they get to his imprisonment and like when he's in Earth Kingdom custody, like traveling on the road and stuff, I think that made a ton of sense with where the story was going with Inumashu. I don't know. I think it's just so hard. Iroh is just such a tough character. And again, I agree, I think, with what B-Toms was saying, is that the writing is not like super fantastic. And again, it feels like it might be more like if I was a younger, like a young adult, like a teen, maybe I would enjoy it more. It just feels at points a little like forced, his like wisdom comedy slapstick stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just, I guess.
I enjoy his portrayal. I think the problem is literally Iroh in the animated series. They're all like 10 out of 10s, but he specifically is iconic. Yeah. He's a legend. So no matter, even if he's given an 8 out of 10 performance here, you're comparing him to the original Iroh, and it's just a tough gig. Writing's not doing him as many favors because everything that came out of the OG Iroh's mouth was just something you held on to.
Yeah.
But I actually am enjoying it. It's a nice homage to the character, and the actor's keeping it light but still intelligent with that uncle wisdom.
Yeah, even, I think it's nice that they're like really emphasizing that he is kind of wearing this mask a little bit for Zuko. We know, obviously, we see it more in episode 4 at the ending when we get the flashback, but they're really doing a good job, I think, of dropping these breadcrumbs of he has this internal emotional turmoil about his past and things like that. So I think that's coming through well.
We got a White Lotus style in episode 3.
Yes, we did.
Have we even got a classic Uncle Iroh proverb yet? Just one of those ridiculous.
He hasn't brought up Jasmine Tea from what I remember. He eats a lot of funny food, which is along the similar lines.
In episode 4, in the flashback, he says, I brought all the tea I'll ever need. So they're planting the seeds of his love of tea. Maybe not Jasmine specifically.
Yeah, that's true.
But I guess we can keep that Iroh just discussion going, as we know that he gets captured at the end of episode 3. And then we get so we'll just continue with the Iroh Zuko conversation, rather. Mm-hmm. Just all of that, what happens in episode 4, his capture, his discussion with Aang, maybe in particular, as well as his interaction with the Earthbender captain that reminds him of his times in Ba Sing Se. So if we want to keep rolling that carpet out, we can.
Yeah, what exactly does he talk to Aang about? Is it just kind of Aang says the Fire Nation started this war and has the power to end it, and he's kind of acknowledging it's not that easy?
Yeah, that's pretty much what Iroh says. Aang's talking about like the state of the world right now too, and that everyone's kind of, I don't want to say they're bad, but it's just like not like full of love and balance is kind of, that's the point I took out of it. I was very interested that they had this level of interaction this early. I think it's something that if you want to maybe criticize or a way that the original cartoon could have been improved from like a fan service perspective of Aang and Iroh interacting more because of their kind of beliefs and their personal codes and stuff like that. So I enjoyed that part of it. Thought it was interesting that they, in the Earth Kingdom prisons, they allowed that like window gate between the two of them because like they can literally earthbend them into a box. But and I guess they're not totally completely evil. They allow them to socialize a little
and
bit.
Both of those two people are two of the strongest benders in the world,
also
too.
True. Yeah, so. Also true.
But I like the conversation between Aang and Iroh. Really nothing there. I think to add on to B-Tom's, it was also to give a little bit more perspective on what Aang thinks of Zuko. Just right now, just
true.
Word for word basically says Zuko is just an ass, kind of. Just
he, that is not they, word for word. Don't say word for word and then use the word ass in a Nickelodeon show.
Right.
No, he does. Right. He does say, oh, he let you take the fall and get in prison. He's away scot-free. I'm really starting to find out who he is. And Iroh, kind of like you were trying to get to, corrects him and says, hey, listen, buddy, you have no idea. And that is not word for word what Iroh said.
And we do see the example come through here because Zuko infiltrates the base and learns that Iroh is now being escorted out. But also at the same time, the Avatar coincidentally is now being kept at the castle. So now Zuko has this internal dilemma of, do I save my uncle or do I capture the Avatar? And while I'm sure you could make the argument that I'm sure Uncle Iroh would be fine on his own and Zuko could just go for the Avatar here while he's captured, Zuko, we see the niceness in him a little bit here as he chooses to go for Iroh, which I like for Zuko as a character.
This was a moral dilemma established in the animated episode as well. Mm-hmm. Uncle originally gets captured because he falls asleep in a hot spring. Yeah. So narratively, this reason for him getting captured makes him a little bit more badass, if you will. But no, when Zuko is on the trail of Uncle, he sees Appa fly by and he says, the Avatar, and it flashes to a different scene while he ponders, but he does inevitably wind up choosing to pursue his uncle. And going along with that thread, the fight scene where he actually catches up to the Earthbenders was, they had a couple shot for shot taken from the original. And I think that whole sequence was really well done. I do want to circle back and talk about Iroh's interaction with the earthbending commander, whatever you want to call him. But that fight sequence was a big thumbs up for me. Maybe the earthbending is still a little robotic and not as cool as it should look, but I was pleased.
Yeah, the shot for shot, I was very pleasantly surprised at that. I mean, we get the overhead axe kick with Zuko to break the chains, which is literally exactly what he does. We have Iroh like using the chains to break the rocks, and they were on fire, which was sick. It looked really cool. So all that stuff worked really well. And the change of having this like in-depth conversation, because they bring up Ba Sing Se in the cartoon when they're transporting him, and the guy tried, you know, he makes Iroh feel a little bad about it, type of deal, but it wasn't this level of emotion. I thought the guy did a really good job acting as well.
Yeah, they gave that guy a lot of camera time. Like it was Iroh's back for a majority of that speech, and he kind of just goes on this tangent here talking about how Iroh was the reason that his son gets killed and that Iroh knows nothing of loss, but we all know that's not true. Yeah, that's not true. I was getting moved from that guy a little bit, honestly, and it pissed me off in the animated series as well, because Iroh does play it off like he's kind of supposed to. He doesn't want to show weakness to the enemy. He doesn't want to be sympathetic towards this guy, you know, but he kind of plays it off like an asshole a little bit. You know, he's like, oh, I was talking about you, not me, in terms of, you know, the emotions of war and things like that. So it hurts when I see Iroh be mean like that in those situations. But we also see when the commander does step away for a second that Iroh does have to think on his actions a little bit.
This was able to achieve an emotional beat that maybe the animated series couldn't, because they used this earthbender to say, you know, you torched the wall. By the time I finally got to my brother's body, there was nothing left to bury. Right. They couldn't be as graphic as the animated, and we'll get to the Ozai incinerating that literal dude. That is what the firebenders would be doing. Like, they can kind of peel back the layers of the actual darkness that is going on because the firebenders are waging this war. But
oh my God, that is totally my fault. I just completely skipped the Ozai Azula stuff from episode 3, but we'll finish this out and then we'll hop back.
Yeah, we were going along with Iroh and Zuko.
But I will say, I love the level of severity there is in these fights, because you know, in the animated show, when they're fighting, people get whipped with fire and they can kind of still stand their ground. But here there are consequences, that we see that with the earthbender when fighting Iroh and Zuko, when he fires the shrapnel, it would just make sense that it wouldn't just knock you back. Some of it would get lodged in your body. And I like this. Mm-hmm. It puts a little bit more pressure on our main characters and really instills that pain is real here, you know? there is a consequence.
More realism to the bending.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. But so why don't we hit the two Iroh and Zuko flashbacks that were specifically for the live action? I don't recall either of them. And then we can go back and hit Azula and Ozai. So as I recall, the first flashback is at the funeral for Lu Ten, who was Iroh's son who died at the Battle of Ba Sing Se, or the siege on Ba Sing Se. I think this is okay at establishing a background and a base for Zuko and Iroh, and maybe a little bit more in your face why Iroh would feel so compelled and feel that attachment to Zuko in the later flashback, where it is him joining him on the ship and Zuko has the bandage over his eye. I thought both of the flashbacks, they didn't feel out of place, and I was pretty okay with them being added for the show.
What a well-acted scene, I thought, by Zuko's actor here with younger Zuko. You can tell he feels very nervous. He's kind of stuttering a little bit to get these words out to kind of try and console Uncle Iroh here. I thought it worked perfectly. I think that the beginning of this scene is a perfect example, B-Tom's, a little bit of what you were talking about last episode, where it's very exposition heavy. It's the dialogue is very kind of clunky, and it's just like when the two people are walking away and they're like so obviously telling us like, oh, his son died as a hero and now he will be remembered as a coward. And I don't know, like off the top of my head, it feels like maybe Ozai could have said something a little less obvious, but implying that idea.
Well, you know, what's weird is Ozai then proceeds to give his grievances and say, your son will live on in Fire Nation legend. So he kind of does come in and reiterate exactly what those two bystanders said.
Yeah, that just felt like they were smacking us in the face with like, this is what happened type of deal. And I was like, I don't know if we needed that.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm
going to be honest. I wish Zuko looked a little bit younger, maybe even have like a different actor come in here, because I feel like when I'm remembering those flashbacks of Zuko being the kind, young, bright-eyed kid that he is, like he is a kid, you know, he doesn't look like his teen self.
Yeah. The hair.
Yeah. Even with the long hair, it was still like this, the events of him being kind and now becoming the Avatar obsessed person. It feels like that timeline is like really quick, you know, that's all I'm saying really is if he was portrayed as like a kid, maybe in those scenes, and then he's grown up and then gets the scars, then I could kind of reason with that development a little bit. But it just felt like that's just a small complaint that I had. It's a small complaint. You see what I'm saying, though?
I do, because they just animate the entire character differently in the flashbacks in the original show. So maybe if they got a different actor, that would help to emphasize how younger he is. But I don't know.
It's still fine, though.
It's also like the greater show is away. Is kind of moving at that pace too, where it's been like maybe 2 days, feels like, since they've met Aang.
Right.
Type of deal. So yeah, it just kind of falls in line with that, maybe.
So shall we talk about our introduction to Azula and Ozai?
Yeah, I feel like this might generate a lot of conversation between us.
Yeah, I mean, so the opening scene, I like what it establishes for the character of Azula. Yes. I mean, she is infiltrating a resistance within the Fire Nation who was plotting on that night to assassinate the Fire Lord. And then it's revealed in the throne room, which looks fantastic, by the way, the Fire Lord's throne room. It is revealed that it was indeed Azula, and the Fire Lord was privy to the plans.
It was a good introduction for Azula. She looks so young, and I know she's supposed to be young in the animated show. She is the younger sister, correct? That's like the big part of it. But she looks like really young here, and I just can't. She seems like really short too, and I feel like for me as Azula in the animated show, she felt more powerful, I guess, in the animated show is what I'm trying to say here. And while the deception was really up Azula's alley, I'm not a fan of how they're portraying her to be almost envious of her brother. I feel like that takes away a lot of Zuko's character arc. I think one of Zuko's biggest points of rage is that his younger sister is superior to him in every way at the beginning of the show. And that kind of eats at him throughout the series. Whereas in this, I'm getting the feeling that the dad almost praises Zuko for finding the Avatar. It wasn't necessarily praise, I would say, but it was at least recognition to some degree. And Azula's jealous of that. I'm just upset because, again, Zuko's biggest thing, one of his biggest things, is that his sister was better than him at everything. And capturing the Avatar would not only put him ahead of her, but also have the father view him in a better light. So I'm not crazy so far on Azula, to be honest.
I think that this scene could have been way brutaler from like Azula's perspective. It feels like, yes, she sells them out, but that doesn't feel like it hits the level that she was like, you know, like that level of pure evil. And
like if she was maybe the one to burn.
Yeah. Like, and then we could have seen a blue fire, which would have been cool. Like if she
I hope we get that
would have like joined in. It just felt like she's like kind of walks out of the crowd, says like, yes, father. And then that's kind of it. It just, I don't know. It feels like an opportunity where they could have used the live action medium in this more serious tone. They want to ratchet up and really show us how crazy she is. But I mean, maybe we'll just get there.
You're saying Azula wouldn't be a tattletale to daddy. She would have just incinerated the room of resistance people right then and there.
No, I think even the tattletale to daddy part's fine. I think she, like if she would have joined in, or like maybe even like if the guy had like insulted Ozai to his face, and like she would have maybe burned him before Ozai even got the chance to type of deal.
Oh, that would have been so nice.
If she firebends and it's not blue flame, I'm turning it off. Podcast is over. That is a guarantee. I am telling you. I do want to speak to what you said about how Ozai seems to be sympathetic to Zuko and praising him. I think that was Ozai just showing what a sociopath he is to just play his two children against each other. Zuko's never going to hear that compliment.
That was
so
the other
like
way
he's
I was
complimenting
kind of
nothing. But the only reason he says it is to be like, look at what your brother's doing. He's a failure. And even he found the Avatar. What have you done? Light a fire under her butt. If they're including Azula and Ozai, this is all new content. I'm pretty okay with them showing us kind of that side of Ozai and how manipulative he can be.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my second thought when watching the scene was, okay, it's probably just them trying to show us just how much he just plays the kids back and forth. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that makes me feel like that's what it actually was. And that's what I'm buying, because I didn't like the idea that it was more so. I felt like it was praise at first.
Yeah, the Azula stuff's weird, because reading all the discourse on the internet is kind of crazy of the exact polar opposite opinions people have on her character arc and the meanings behind scenes and things like that. I guess maybe we were too young at the time, or I wasn't like tapped in so much to like the online community, but I don't remember her being like this huge contentious, like argumentative thing about her character arc. But people talking about the live action show are like on such opposite sides of the coin. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's just one of those things again, where it's such a beloved character. The expectations are high. So people are going to have very passionate feelings about them.
And also, I mean, they were probably talking like full series stuff, and people were like, oh, complete character assassination. They butchered her. And other people are like, oh, like this is a great interpretation, all this stuff. It's just, I don't know. Obviously, it's fairly par for the course when you get adaptation of beloved IP like this. But Azula specifically, I feel like it kind of shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
We see Mei and Ty Lee, too.
Yes, we do.
They look good. I guess
they're back in the Girls Academy or whatever, which is alluded to in the original show. So now we're just seeing them in that timeline.
Really quickly, have you guys seen that theory about Ty Lee possibly being an Air Nomad?
What? I have. She looks like Aang.
Yeah, that's the thing. So one is she doesn't have traditional Fire Nation features. At least we're in referring to the animated show. So she doesn't have traditional Fire Nation features. Her eyes, like Kyle just said, they're very similar to Aang's. Like if you switch their faces, they're one for one the same. Mm-hmm. She was obviously raised in the circus. She has no idea who her parents are. So people just kind of have this theory that, you know, Fire Nation, you know, burned her parents down and kind of she was then forced to flee and ended up being adopted into the run. So,
yeah. Also, I guess like the idea of like
and her fighting style,
yeah, kind of speaks to more like Air Nomad stuff. That's like fun, but if it doesn't matter, then it's kind of like whatever. Yeah, I thought Mai's actress did a great like deadpan monotone Mai like delivery of her lines. It was like very obvious. Like, okay, this is Mai.
Yeah, and the last thing we get for the Fire Nation here is that Azula reaching out to Commander Zhao for tabs on the Avatar. It was fine, I guess. It's Azula's way of now trying to throw her hat in the ring for competition of capturing the Avatar.
Zhao is the one character potentially where I've given up comparing him to his animated counterpart because they are just going in such a different direction. I consider them two different characters.
It was so weird seeing Zuko and Zhao working together in episode 3, I think it was. They're talking about their plans to capture the Avatar. I mean, granted, they do have a little bit of an argument, but they are, at the end of the day, still working together. And I thought that was definitely weird to see.
I think this will probably maybe create that rivalry then.
Yes.
I liked his
say that. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked his reaction to it. I just liked the line of, and I'm not going to say it word for word, but essentially like we're in the big game now or something like that.
Yeah.
I was trying to work away and to use the word ass there to update. I just couldn't think of it in a few seconds, but I liked it because it was just roping this side character back into our kind of main story here, which is important.
Yeah. But let's just knock out Sokka and Katara stuff here with another great callback from the animated show. Sokka and Katara still bickering about, you know, the whole Jet and Sai incident and not really seeing eye to eye all that well. They get word of these secret tunnels, which I didn't think they were actually it wasn't going to be the actual secret tunnel that is the Cave of Two Lovers or whatever. I thought they were just saying secret tunnels because that's the way they were going to get in. I'm fine with it. I thought it was obviously great seeing our boys, the band, back together, and they absolutely crushed it.
They were fantastic. Yeah. I thought the lead minstrel was amazing. He might be my favorite character in the whole show.
Yeah.
It was great. I was satisfied, and that was the character I was talking about. I would have been upset if I didn't see them to some extent.
Of course.
Even played the song at the end. I wish they had like led with the song and we got it fleshed out more, but we did hear secret tunnel, secret tunnel. And they are also the ones that show us the really cool kind of Omashu backstory animation that did kind of have that fluid picture show in the animated series. So it was quick. They showed us a couple elements from the animated show that everybody probably wanted to see, and they got him out of there. It was very jarring to see Sokka and Katara go through the secret lover's cave.
Yes, definitely.
So they kind of take a different interpretation of love shines brightest in the dark. The badger moles looked fantastic, and they kind of spun it in a way that did make sense given the storyline. So that's another one I do kind of have to give them kudos. Even though they changed what was in the show, they still included these story elements, and it did seem to make sense to me.
It does fit too with what they're seemingly, I don't want to say ignoring, but going a slightly different direction with this Aang and Katara romantic relationship. In the cartoon, obviously, Aang is much more involved in it, I guess you could say, and clearly has a crush on her from the absolute get-go type of deal. And we've talked about it last episode where they may be trying to get away from that, at least in season one, and it maybe will develop further into the series. So with that not being a thing they want to do, this feels like kind of the next best substitute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of want to go on a tangent. It feels like Aang and Katara in the live action really just don't have much chemistry at all through four episodes. I feel like they haven't had any really full-on scene partner dialogue going off of each other. It was nice to see Sokka and Katara kind of have some sibling moments where they got animated with each other and treated each other like brother and sister. That was good to see. I do find it lacking that the romance element, will they, won't they, between Aang and Katara isn't here, because that was just so intentional by the writers in the animated series from episode one. He has a crush on her. She sees him as a little brother, and it was something just simmering in the background, but just something I'm going to have to get used to, I suppose.
Yeah. Another thing I have a question about pertaining to Katara is a lot of people online have been talking that her character just feels a lot different. She feels less, the word I was seeing a lot, and then I think I agree with, is motherly. Seems like she feels like quite lost and maybe not necessarily timid, but I don't know. She felt more like in control and like fiery and like the boss of the squad.
I think you're
in the animated.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, because I mean, even as I'm thinking back on these episodes and of the animated, Sokka's calling her a little girl here in the live action, whereas in the animated show, he always refers to her as the mom of the group and that caretaker kind of role. So I think they are even making Katara seem more of a child in the show than they are of her. And they're not really playing up her roles and duties that she had at the Water Tribe and making her appear like that mother figure that she was in the animated show.
Yeah, she's coming off nervous and self-doubting, and she's never really had a very triumphant, heroic, let me show my chops. She did get the freeze on Jet, which was cool. I think she is starting to get better and better as a waterbender, which is nice to see, but I completely agree, Kyle. She was a very strong heroine character in the animated series, and that is not coming through four episodes.
Yeah, and again, is it something that will develop over time? It's possible. It just feels like that is not, I don't want to say a miss yet, but I feel that impact on the show.
I think it was even at the beginning of episode three when Aang is talking to Katara about how to improve her bending and what the Air Nomads taught him, and that scene just felt cringy to me. Like, that wasn't even like a touchy moment for me. Then they start just casually splashing each other. I'm like, this is just so forced. It's not, I'm not feeling that romantic vibe, and it doesn't feel cute to watch. It just feels kind of cringy as of right now.
And I think, like B-Tom's saying, even absent romance, just chemistry in general, I think feels still lacking.
Yeah. I'm still not sold on Aang. I have to say it. And I'm going to give him all the credit in the world, because it is such a difficult role to play. The live action expectations are always going to be so hard to fulfill. I just am not completely quite sold on Aang yet, but we'll see.
I would agree with that. I kind of want to change the subject. Going back to episode one and two, we really didn't highlight that Kyoshi's message to Aang was to go to the North Pole to prevent another genocide of the Northern Water Tribe, essentially. That is his mission right now. It is not to find a waterbending master. And we are halfway through season one, which is called Book One Water, and he hasn't done any waterbending yet. So I'm kind of reading a lot about that. I'm only halfway through, but the audience says, yo, what is up with Aang not really waterbending all that much? So that is a very bizarre change in his motivation to get to the North Pole.
Yeah, it's just, he feels, let's say, the most different. It feels like Sokka is the closest, but we've already mentioned some differences. Katara is closer than Aang, but she obviously, like we just mentioned, has differences. And Aang is so tough because they've changed his motivations, which changes literally almost internally everything about the character. I think Aang too is in that Iroh bucket of, he's such a blend of this like childlike wonder and comedy and funny moments, and we get serious moments more later on, but they're really trying to do this balance of serious and funny. at the same time early on. And for me, I just don't think it's working that much. I feel like that's part of like the cringy dialogue moments. And like, I'm not feeling like it's working.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
So while Sokka and Katara are getting through the secret tunnel, Aang is imprisoned originally, but then he has a meeting with King Bumi. And I gotta say, Bumi's actor was fantastic. I think they changed the tone of the character of Bumi. He was not giving the vibe of
mad genius,
an old best friend from 100 years ago, the mad genius. He was a little bit more like in your face. Remember your duty. That's all I care about. You're the avatar. You need to do your mission. The kookiness came through and there was a little bit of that Bumi charm, but his message to Aang fell a little bit flat and seemed a little bit, I don't know, sinister, maybe.
Yeah.
Definitely. More,
again, it's one of these things. It makes sense with the story they want to tell. It's just, is that what I want to watch? Maybe not necessarily. I think it's a very obviously realistic take on Bumi having lived 100 years, Aang's disappeared, that's his friend. But I agree, B-Times, I was almost waiting for at the end in the aftermath to be more jovial and like, I was just testing you, like,
I was expecting some more cleverness. Like, he didn't feel like a mad genius. He just felt mad. You know, that was
very, yeah, and just very jaded.
Yeah.
It's also some of the charm in the animated was the reveal that it's Bumi doesn't come till the end. And right when they meet, he identifies him as Bumi and spends the entire episode being like, this isn't the Bumi I know. You used to be cool and my friend and skip rocks, which was another like eye roll. Come on, like stop reminding him of the friendship. He knows about the friendship.
Yeah.
But
I guess I will agree.
Like, of it. It's just the execution and when actually watching it with my eyeballs was like, okay.
I think Bumi is probably the perfect representation of the best representation in the show so far of did the best they could with what they were given. You know, I didn't like the Bumi that they had, the character Bumi that they are trying to portray in the live action. Again, we've said it enough. It was just more of a straight shooter, more serious, felt betrayed by Aang rather than having a little bit more of motive in his testing and a little bit of cleverness, shrewdness mixed into it as well, while also respecting Aang. That was kind of all thrown away here. I probably liked him. The moment they started the fight is probably when I was like, okay, this Bumi's pretty badass.
But you saw those hairy pits and you're
I saw the muscles and I was like, okay, this kind of works out a little bit. But I didn't like the non-mad genius aspect to it. That was Bumi. It was the mad genius, and all he felt really here was just like a crazy, grumpy old man.
I kind of disagree in the fact that I think the portrayal by the actor was good. He went for it. He was given
words
and like the kookiness was definitely there.
Yeah.
Also, some of the earth bending in the fight sequence was a bit choppy, but they did do that patented drop kick that Bumi does. Where
yes,
it just
I have it. I have it written
and does
down,
the kick. Yeah. It was the that Rhino was pretty Schneider. Cool. I really hated how that fight came to a head where Aang was just balancing two giant boulders. We've also never really seen airbending be that effective at essentially earthbending, keeping those boulders in the air, and he's able to do two of them. That felt a little weird, but I don't know.
Yeah, the one thing I will say in terms of good, just like you guys were saying with the Iroh fight, there was a lot of one-to-ones here that, like you said, the double kick into the boulder, the quicksand from the feet, and then the obvious thing, lifting the, whatever you want to call it, piece of arena that he does and holds it over Aang. Those moments were really cool. And of course the backflip that Aang does over the boulder to dodge, those were all great. I agree though. It was Bumi just willing to throw himself away for this test. Just, you know, like kill me. This will just make you the man that you need to be. It's just like, come on. Like, what are we doing here?
Also, Bumi was holding all the cards because if he dropped that, Bumi would have just punched through the boulder and done something kooky. So I almost wish they did that, but
yeah.
The idea of having someone really push Aang in this way to make him realize like, hey, bro,
you've been gone for this amount of time. Like, there have been people actively suffering for this amount of time. I think that that totally fits within this more serious tone. It's just the execution of it just fell flat for me. Again, like I said, maybe 2-4 minutes ago, if there was this more jovial ending of Boomy being like, I had to test you, had to show you. I don't know maybe exactly what I was looking for, but it just wasn't 100% this. And just random side comment is I thought Aang's choreography in this fight was really odd in that he kept jumping over everything.
Yeah.
It just felt less common sense. Like, there were so many things that were coming high enough off the ground that he could have just laid down. But obviously, yeah, he wants to airbend, so he's going to airbend himself up. I just was a stupid thing that I noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I'm going to go forward a little bit to. When Boomy has a feast thrown for Aang, he's offering the meat or the stew. And he's like, which choice are you going to make? And I was really, when Aang said stew, I was really hoping to get a wrong choice. But he says, yeah, good choice. And I'm like, you missed your opportunity for a wrong choice.
Yeah, I can't tell if that was something that was supposed to be like a call so out much as kids.
Yeah.
And that it's kind of disappointing that it wasn't in there, or that was actually like a fandom wide.
Definitely us. Definitely us.
We have been saying that since we were little tykes. So
wrong
maybe
choice.
That exact line delivery, but everybody knows wrong choice. Him throwing off the robe, jacked, and he earth bends his spine back into place. Like, that whole 10 seconds was.
Oh, yeah. And the end of the animated fight is Boomy just kind of lays into the ground, and he just. You know what I'm talking about?
And I was hoping, up.
Yeah, I was hoping he was going to do that exit here, but he didn't. I was pissed about it. I loved that. That was like one of the coolest things I thought for an earthbender to do, is basically like swim through the ground.
Mm-hmm. What'd you guys think of Katara bending the ice and Sokka sliding on it to tackle Boomy?
Cool. Cheesy. Snifty, a little bit.
I don't know. Yeah.
It wasn't like
that's our first time her water bending.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's the first time we've seen her use ice, no?
I mean, she froze Jet at the beginning.
Oh, shit.
If you want to say that this episode is the first time she introduces ice, then yes, 100%. Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't something I was like, oh my God, that was so sick. It was like, okay, like they're working together. And
yeah,
it pulls together at the very end, because Boomy's whole thing is like, Aang needs to do this by himself. And it's like, no, power of friendship. We got this, all three of us together.
And he kind of teaches Boomy to be his friend again, and they ride the little Jonskis.
Well, I feel like we have been trashing these episodes pretty harshly. I still think that 3 and 4 were, I guess.
Have you read anything about this show online? We are being tamed, and we are giving both sides of the coin.
I've actually been avoiding all of that negativity for the most part, so that's been good. But yeah, 3 and 4 I still think as a whole were probably better than 1 and 2. I still think my favorite moment of the whole show is Kyoshi. That was like such a high moment for me.
Yeah, I think maybe I do have to watch them again to try to like wash off that like initial comparison stuff. But it's just so tough. You're literally making an adaptation of material that people love. Like, it's impossible to divorce what you're doing from what we've already seen and known. It's just such
especially when you're trying to copy it.
Yeah, it's so difficult to do. And this is part of the reason why we were like, do we really need this? Like, can't you just give us like a fresh story somewhere else type of deal? So,
Kyle, one of the TikToks you posted, someone commented, you guys are only saying this because you've seen the original. You need to watch it with someone who's never watched the original animated series. And I want to say two things. Number one, you're absolutely right. I am comparing it, and that's making it seem worse. And number two, if I come across someone who has never seen Avatar and they show interest in seeing Avatar, I am sitting down and watching the entire Avatar animated series with that person, and I would never present them with the live action as their, by choice, as their first introduction to the series.
It's funny, because this is actually a good conversation, because I actually recommended this show to someone. And you know who that was? My mother.
I knew you were going to say that.
That is the perfect target audience of someone, because one, she was there for all the episodes that we had watched, but she didn't care enough to know what actually was going on in the episodes. She just knew of Avatar: The Last Airbender. And I feel like this brings enough of the story, enough of the camaraderie, to the point where someone where my mother would enjoy it. But I'm not going to go out there to some 20-year-old who's like never seen Avatar and be like, yo, watch this live action, it's sick. Like B-Toms, I would just tell them to watch the animated version if they showed interest in it, you know? So it's just this weird thing that they've given us that no one really asked for. And why are we going to do this if we have another way to point people?
Yep.
Who knows?
And I'm glad people are liking it and enjoying it and having fun
absolutely,
watching it.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's great. That's just for and me. And again, it's just been difficult, I think.
And I will say for me, I have been enjoying it. This is a show that I'm excited to hit next on. I'm not going to recommend it to anyone else, probably besides my own mother, but I have been enjoying hitting next on each episode, especially now knowing that the creative choices they've been making can kind of be good and fresh. It's giving me something else to look forward to with these upcoming episodes. Maybe something new will surprise me.
Difficult is a good word to use to describe it, unfortunately. I've been a little bit more positive about these two than the first two. I think I gave 1 and 2 maybe a 4 out of 10. I think this is a 5 out of 10. Like, it is still a slightly below average show in my opinion, just top to bottom. But I am allowing myself to have a lot more fun with it. I'm trying to compare it less, and
I've still been enjoying the podcast. Has definitely been fun to do. Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. It's fun to break things down. I mean, hear your guys' perspectives on scenes that maybe I didn't think about. It changes my opinion, et cetera, et cetera. But also, I think even just removing the we know the original content thing, I think Blank Slate, judging it as a television production, you can kind of tell that it's not like a super high-end television production type of deal, you know, which obviously hurts it because it is trying to be this more serious interpretation. So
we've repeated it so much, so I'm going to say it again. I feel like if I had never seen the animated show and I was watching this with fresh eyes, I'd give this like a 6 or 7 out of 10. But because I know that stuff, I'm with B-Toms. It's like around a 5. Like, it's average TV to me, you know?
Yeah. So just the world is so fucking cool. There's so much fun stuff they can do, and there's so much great source material. But it's when it doesn't execute as well, I think it's worse because we know what it could be.
Yeah. Any final thoughts from you guys on this these episodes?
No.
Secret tunnel.
Yeah, shout out to that guy. Shout out to that guy.
Secret tunnel. We've been saying it. It's a fun ride so far.
Yeah.
It's cool to see the characters. Maybe not the best quality, but
it's taken us back to our childhood. That's all that really matters. So that's going to be it for today's episode coverage of Avatar The Last Airbender. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on all of our socials at Bingetown TV. Be sure to join our Discord and chat with us about anything that you're watching and currently watching with us. You know, we love those discussions. And lastly, for our podcast catalog, go check out bingetowntv.com. Everything's all nicely, neatly organized for you guys there. You can definitely find something that you've watched in the past on that channel, so go ahead and check it out. If I didn't say it enough already, once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.